Vegas Bad Boys Podcast presents Matt Michaels, People I Don't Hate.
Hey everybody, Matt Michaels here, and today I am joined by a man who, I got a lot of respect for him because he's been pursuing this dream that he's had, and he's been able to make it, and that is Ricky Mandel, or as you might know him from Lucha Underground, Ricky Mundo. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I'm doing all right, man. It's cool to think that you had a dream. When did you first start connecting pro wrestling and become a fan and then go, okay, I think I want to try this?
Okay. So as we talked before, I'm originally from Illinois. Okay? So what happened was, growing up, my dad was the fan of wrestling, right? So as a young kid, I'm thinking, okay, well, whatever dad likes must be cool, right? So I was familiar from a very young age with wrestling. Okay, like, you know, your Hogan's, your Savages, Jake the Snake, all those guys. So I had toys and I had the pillows and all that merchandise. But I didn't really watch wrestling as a kid. I guess I was just attracted to maybe the bright colors at the time. It wasn't until a year after my family and I had moved from Illinois to California, and I went back to visit my sister, that I discovered wrestling. One of my friends had invited me to a show, and at this point, I'm just like, okay, cool. Like, I just really want to hang out with my friend who I hadn't seen in a year. So I'm like, oh, yeah, sure, let's go to this wrestling show. Like I said, don't know anything about it other than what I knew growing up as a kid. So I remember, like, one of the first things I asked my friend is, and keep in mind, this is 98. This is when, like, Austin, Taker, Kane, Mankind, The Rock, you know, those guys are on.
Right, right.
And I remember just asking him, and I look back and I feel like such a fool. Like if there were people around, they're probably like, dumb little kid, whatever. But I remember asking him, is Hulk Hogan going to be here? And he just looked at me like, he's in WCW. That's the other company. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh, man. So did that live event, was that your first exposure to what a crowd feels like in a wrestling environment?
Yes. And that's why I always laugh at, because, you know, you always hear these people and these wrestlers like, oh, I my first experience with wrestling was this show or this event or this move or this wrestler or whatever. Like, my first real, like, experience with pro wrestling was in a sold out arena in 1998 when it was extremely hot.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and keep in mind, it's Chicago. So yeah. And you always hear the stories of how much more wild those crowds are. So it's one of those cities that everybody's just nuts. So, I mean, that was my first experience with it, which really, I mean, honestly, from that day on, went on to not only become a fan, but study wrestling and just start collecting anything I could get my hands on. I mean, like toys to magazines to, you know, I'll probably post some photos up soon of, like, my room growing up was just nothing but wrestling everywhere. It was just the ultimate fan kid who also knew one day that's not only what he wanted to do, but would do it.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you know, having moved to California when you were 10, and now you get this bug, you're just a little bit, about 11, 12 years old, you start, you know, getting this bug, start getting passionate. When did you actually then take the first steps in pursuing it? And did you do anything in high school in terms of either, you know, mat wrestle or football or anything like that? Were you an athlete going into wrestling?
As far as my like athletic background, I played basketball for the kids' leagues. I never played in junior high or high school. In fact, I don't even think my junior high had a team. If they did, I probably would have played during junior high as well. But once I got to junior high, my mom was actually the one who was like, "Hey, you want to be a pro wrestler? Maybe take some drama classes." Because she noticed, like, hey, there's a lot of, like, you know, these guys are talking and they're entertainers. So all throughout junior high and high school, I actually acted in theater. And in, I think my senior, it was my senior year, they provided film study and film classes. And you would learn about different films, which is really cool. But my main thing for the film class was that we also made our own movie. So I wanted that opportunity to, because I already performed, like I said, on stage,
right,
in front of live audiences, but I had never really worked in front of a camera.
Yep.
So I was like, okay, well, that's part of wrestling too. So I'm going to get used to that. Obviously, it's different.
Yeah.
But still, in my mind, it felt like the right move to make. And I'm glad I did it. It was a lot of fun, and I do believe like it helped.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is, too, is that, I mean, I studied, you know, drama all the way through, you know, college. And the first thing that I learned in terms of being in front of the camera is that subtlety translates in front of the camera, whereas on stage, you have to be bigger. And, you know, and it, and I think that's sometimes what happens with wrestlers, is they don't have that experience going into the ring, so everything they do is so big, and it doesn't have to be. And that's the, you know, I think that's one of the keys, and I'm glad that you got that experience. When did you then go from high school, did you transition and find you know, a place to train at that point? What was your path?
Okay, so when I was 11, that's when all this started, right? And all the wrestlers I had heard of were, or like the main schools or whatever I heard of were, you know, you obviously hear the Hart Dungeon because of guys like Jericho and Lance Storm and, you know, obviously the Harts themselves, right? So you kept, you know, they kept, you know, the Hart Dungeon this, the Hart Dungeon that. And then all these, like, all my, like, first favorite wrestlers were all from Canada. So I was kind of like, oh, well, maybe that's the place to go. Because I really didn't hear of any other wrestling schools at this time. But as I grew up, as I got older and living in California, I started to hear about UPW.
Amen. And, amen, brother. Thank you.
Right, right. So I'm like, okay, UPW, like, that's, like, literally in Los Angeles. It's, I looked it up. It was, like, an hour away, maybe. Well, like, a little, like, an hour and 15 away.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, cool. So, and my goal was always graduate high school and go to wrestling school. and, you know, like, obviously my dad was, like, you know, both my parents were obviously, like, super cool with it. And as far as my dad was concerned, he was like, hey, I'm going to pay for wrestling school. It's, I think it was, like, $3,000. Altogether,
sure.
You know,
yeah.
It was like, okay, well, you have the grades to go to college, but if you want to go to wrestling school, live your dream, cool, do that, save me money. Yeah, sweet. Okay. So that was like the plan, but I started really discovering that I knew I was going to go to the wrestling school. I mean, UPW officially when I was either a freshman or sophomore in high school. So it was fairly early.
Okay.
That was the plan. And keep in mind, like, at this time, you know, nowadays you hear about all these guys, like, starting so young. You know, it's kind of, you know, it's common. Whereas back then, I don't think it was as common.
It wasn't.
To start so young.
It wasn't.
So, yeah. And then I remember seeing on the UPW website that, like, oh, Nate Nickerson, little Nate, was 16 years old and started. But at this point, I just was like, you know what? Like, that's cool. But I already said committed to graduating high school, just focusing on getting that out of the way. I'll do my drama, and then I'll start when I'm 18. And that's, like, literally, I think I graduated high school, interned 18 a week or so later. Huh. It wasn't very long. It might have been 2 weeks. I think it was 2 weeks later that I officially started wrestling school. And that was only because my family came in like right after, and I was like, ugh. You guys kind of came later. School.
That's funny. That's funny. And you know, I trained at UPW between like 2000 and 2002.
And okay.
My trainers there were Tom Howard and Samoa Joe and John Cena. Every once in a while, filled in, and Tim Fisher, right. Who was Damian Steele in XPW. Was a trainer for a little bit. Now you, at that time when you got in, Shannon and Shane Ballard were the main trainers, right?
Yes, that's correct. It was Shannon, Shane. I had Aaron Aguilera, Ryan Sakota, and then Nate filled in for Sakota shortly after that.
Gotcha. So the age-old question I like to ask when it comes to the Ballards is, when you first started training with them, were they 60 years old or 70 years old?
I think they were 80, dude.
Oh, man. I mean, you can't ask for...
I kid, obviously. Yeah. Shannon's one of my... Like, I still talk to... I mean, I still talk to Shane, like, yeah. Through, like, Facebook and all that, but, like I said, there's just not, like, a month that goes by that me and Shannon don't communicate. Like, we'll send each other texts or we'll call each other, and, you know, it could be for something as simple as, like, oh, what are your workout routines looking like nowadays? And just, like, simple little things like, hey, I remember when you taught me this, just to brush up on it. Is this how this would work, or what do you think of this? And he'll, oh, yeah, like, you know, just... try it this way or try it that way, and this is what I meant by this, and, you know, just kind of like, you know, I was 15 years ago, so, you know, I'm not going to remember, like, I'll just get, like, random little thoughts of training back in the day and be like, oh, yeah, you told me that, like, let me, like, brush up on it and just make sure I'm doing it right.
Yeah.
So that's, then we'll go over that, and then we'll just talk, you know, just, how's your kid doing, how's life in general, you know? So I always had that communication
with
who I consider not only my trainers and my mentors, but also friends and father figures as well.
Yeah, yeah. That is something that I think, like, if you look at a lot of different places, UPW was one of those places where I think everyone just kind of bought into that mentality of family, you know, and you were treated the same by everyone in terms of the teaching you got, the mentoring you got. You know, it wasn't the they didn't play the game of, you know, screwing around with the trainees. They were always you know, at least in my experience and people that I've, you know, had experience with. And one of the reasons is guys like the Ballards, man. It's, you can't ask for better guys.
Oh, for sure.
When you first got into the ring for your first match, what was your first match?
Me and Hector Canales. And Hector was working at a place, because keep in mind, at this time, UPW wasn't running shows as often.
Right.
So there was no, like, student spotlight shows or you know, just student showcase.
Right, which they used to do that back when I was there in the, you know, the early 2000s had those,
Right. And that was one of, I mean, that was, like, really appealing on the website, too. It was like, oh, every Saturday we do this. And it was like, oh, cool, you know. Obviously, they just hadn't updated the site or whatever, but it was still, you know, obviously I'm not going to ever complain about my wrestling education, but at this point, it kind of came out of nowhere, like within, I think it was like a Thursday or a Wednesday or Thursday, and Hector had called me, and I was 8 months into training, 8 or 9 months in, and he had said that his opponent for the WPW shows had canceled or, you know, couldn't make it or whatever. So, you know, well, who can I wrestle? So he thought of me. And then he called Shannon first and said, like, hey, do you think, you know, with your blessing, do you think I could, you know, bring Ricky out and we could have a match? And, you know, Shannon's like, yeah, I think he's, you know, he's ready to go out there and perform and get experience. And then Hector called me and said, hey, you know, I need an opponent for Sunday. Would you, you know, want to come? It's at this marketplace in Anaheim. And of course I was ready to go. And then he asked if I had, you know, gear, and my mom makes all my stuff. So she started making me like wrestling gear just to like mess around in on my trampoline in the backyard, you know? And then as soon as I got into wrestling, started training, I bought boots. So I had my gear.
And, nice.
You know, it was just, I was good to go. I didn't have to wrestle in like jeans or anything. So,
yeah. Yeah. Which, yeah, that would have been a horrible first experience.
Right. But as far as the question of getting in the ring goes, pretty terrified, like ready, but also just, you know, I was so used to, just the UPW training, you know, because that was the only ring I'd been, well, that and like the OC Dojo, they were like, one was an 18 or maybe 20, one was maybe a little bit smaller. And then I went to WPW and that was an old WCW ring. So that was pretty cool though, too. Like, oh, it's an old WCW ring. Oh, sweet.
Nice.
But just to be wrestling in front of an audience for the first time, and, you know, having to remember a match and trying to remember to, you know, like fire up and do all this stuff that we're taught and like really put it to use.
Right.
But at the same time, you're doing it in front of people who have no idea who you are, and they're wrestling somebody who, you know, at this time Hector had been wrestling there for a while. So of course they know who he was.
Right.
But he wanted it to be face versus face.
Yeah.
So, okay. I mean, maybe it would have been different if I was like, just go out there and be a heel, you know,
right. Kill
whatever. Yeah. You know, but I was face versus face. So. But, you know, I still have that match on video somewhere. I should probably burn it, but...
Yeah. It's like for a celebrity to have a sex tape leaked.
Yeah. Yes. I don't want this leaked. I was pudgy. I was wearing... Okay. So when I started, like, one of my favorite wrestlers is Christian.
Sure.
And I always liked his look, you know, with the, you know, the tights, and when he has the mesh shirt.
Right.
So I was like, okay, well, you know, at this time I'm like, kind of like, not ashamed, but, you know, I'm not like, I'm not ripped or in shape. I'm just kind of like trying to put on size, and I have like baby fat, you know. So I'm just like, okay, I'll maybe get like a shirt like that or something. Couldn't find one. So I threw on what I thought looked presentable and cool. It was kind of like this like mesh, like rash guard type thing, but it ended up on video just looking like a plain black t-shirt. And I was like, ugh, I can't do that. And then from then on, like, I showed Nate, like, he was like the first person. I was like, here, can you watch this match? Tell me what you think. And the first thing is, first critique was, take off the shirt. I don't care if you're fat, skinny, it doesn't matter. Never wear a t-shirt in the ring. And I'm like, oh. Wasn't a t-shirt, but okay. Like, so from then on, I had never worn that shirt thing again.
when you were just, you know, you're breaking in and stuff, what was your what was your first big match? Was it the match that you were able to have with Joey Ryan? Was that kind of your first?
Yes. The one at UPW.
Yeah.
Cause he was my second match.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He was Yeah. So, and the funny thing is not too many people know about this story, but, at that time, he was the PWG champ.
Okay.
And, John Cena had come in, to watch a class. I guess they were just in town for a show, or maybe he was just chilling. I don't know. Cause I think I would have recalled them being in town for a show, but,
right.
Cena shows up to like watch us, and, you know, so I'm the first one there. Cause like, that was just my mentality, was like, be the first one there.
Yeah.
To training. And sure enough, I walk in and there's this big Cadillac in the parking lot. I'm like, oh, who's this? Like, okay, whatever. Walk in and there's John Cena. I'm like, oh, okay. Hello? How are you? You know, but the point is, so he has us all, Shannon warms us up, and then Cena's like, hey, call matches on the fly, you guys. So we're all just calling these matches, and, you know, oh, this is garbage. Oh, you're not doing it, blah, 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 whatever. And then finally he goes, who hasn't had a match yet? He goes, you, get in the ring. Okay. So I get in the ring. He goes, you. He goes, yells to Johnny Yuma. you're going to ref. Sweaty Kid. I think you call him Sweaty Kid. Sweaty Kid. Sweaty Kid ref. So it's me and Cena rolling around, and he's just kind of guiding me through this match. And what I liked about it is I look back, and he knew he was watching what Shannon was warming us up with. And one of them was like elbow in the corner, big boot in the corner. So Cena's doing this like chin lock and, you know, blah, 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 fight out, fight out, fight out, hit the ropes, take a boot. And he, after that, he's like, I knew the kid could take a boot because I just watched him take one. It wasn't going into a, you know,
right,
a fight or a match blind. I knew he could do this. So it was just really cool to like know he was watching what we were capable of, and then was able to show like, hey, you guys got to pay attention to these like finer details. But, moral of this story was that after that match with Joey, Shane came up to me and he's like, oh, what a week you had. I'm like, well, what do you mean? He's like, well, you wrestled the PWG champ and the WWE champ all in the same week. I was like, that I did.
And of course, that's where your career peaked and you never went on to do anything else.
Right.
That's where you retired.
That was it. Should have just retired. Should have been it.
You know, you've had a nice, you know, history of 15 years, and you get into Lucha Underground. What was the thought process behind a day in taping? Because you're obviously going from you know, matches that are, you know, independent, you're not, you know, if you're taping, you're taping for like a local show or, you know, something like that.
Yeah. Like Championship Wrestling and all that. Yeah.
Right. Right. Which is run beautifully. I mean, Dave is amazing.
Of course.
But it's, you know, it's kind of old school TV production. Lucha was a whole different fucking animal. What was it like for you to show up? What was a day of work like?
Well, I'm trying to like look back to, because like when I first went there, I wasn't officially signed yet.
Sure.
I was talking to them about, because they had called me, and they're like, "Hey, we're starting the show, Lucha Underground. This is the pay. This is, you know, blah blah, you know, all this stuff, and we'd like you to come in for an audition." And I was like, kind of weird by that. Just like, audition, and try out. Okay, whatever. You know, because I didn't put that they were really strong on, this is a TV show about pro wrestling. You know, yeah. So I was like, okay, cool. So I went in and they just had me cut a promo. Okay, cool. Come the weekend of the first shows, I've known, you know, Marty Elias forever. So he was like, hey, you know, like, I know you're not fine, but just come as my guest, come check this out, meet the producers, meet these people who maybe you haven't met yet, so they could put a face with to the resume and,
sure,
you know, the, whatever, you know,
sure,
everything. So I went, and the first day, just kind of there watching, and was just amazed, you know, to see this like new product that was so different from, yeah. I mean, I kind of had that vibe of Wrestling Society X, and, you know, you hear that a lot, but from what was going on, you know, at the time, it was pretty much just WWE and TNA. And
yeah.
Really, at that time, I think that was pretty much like the main American shows, the shows in the States, right?
And Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor.
Ring of Honor, yes, yeah, yeah. So it wasn't until the next day that they were like, okay, yeah, like we'll give you a tryout. And I think that's when the aspect of like working here really clicked, because the first day I was just there as a guest.
Yeah.
Like kind of observing and just getting to know the right people. But once you're there and it's like, oh, here's your tryout, you know, and then here's a contract, and you know, this is what you're going to be doing. And then you start meeting all these different guys who have different styles. And because the first week, the first weekend, like Ray Phoenix and Pentagon and, yeah, and all those guys weren't there yet. So it wasn't until the second week that they did, I want to say it was like a triple threat match. And like, you see like Phoenix fly off of like a balcony and it's, you know, all this like amazing stuff. I'm just like, whoa, like I'm about to step it up a little bit. But, as far as just, you know, all that stuff, that's where you know, you, like the indies are good for, I mean, they're good for a lot, but one of the things was like getting the reps in and practicing. And if you screw up, well, then you learn from it. Well, this wasn't the time to be, you know, screwing up. And that was kind of, I put a lot of pressure on myself for that.
Right.
So it was as fun as it was, the first few times, or the, you know, first few times out, just mostly concerned about making sure I didn't step on any toes and just kind of go in there and do my job, really. So excited, but nerve-wracking at the
same
time.
Sure.
Since I wasn't used to, you know, it wasn't like they really had like a developmental
right
system to prepare me for just different things like that. But I mean, still amazing, but a little nerve-wracking at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, if it wasn't nerve-wracking, then why are you doing it? You know?
Right. 100%. 100%.
And, I mean, you got to participate in matches with, I mean, some of the, you know, really, like you said, you got Pentagon, you got Phoenix. I mean, you did the Warfare match, where, you know, El Mariachi logo,
yeah.
You know, Johnny Mundo, I mean, Jeff Cobb, Willie Mack, Chavo,
yes,
Guerrero, I mean,
yeah, all those guys. And I mean, not even just like, even if I didn't get to like perform with them in like against them,
right.
There were times where just to get the team with Chavo,
yeah,
like we did a dark match, I think it was like after like a dark after the, you know, after the show when they do the dark match later, but you know, just getting to like team with him and like, you know, like really understand how to get in the brain of the guys who have been calling matches for all these years and just, you know, pick their brains about like what they do to prep and, you know, just like I said, just calling matches in general, you know. So it was like such a cool thing. And aside from that, just asking for advice from these guys and just hearing the stories. And and when you talk to these guys, like it like clicks,
right?
You know, like, I don't know if it was just something that maybe it was because like, oh, well, this guy's been doing it forever, so he really, I know he knows what he's talking about. So
right.
Light bulb. Or if they just explain stuff better.
Sure.
But a lot of stuff really clicked by talking to a lot of those guys.
Yeah. And I mean, that's, you know, that's one of the things that I think any wrestler who's very serious about growing, you know, not just being the champ or being, you know, a pro wrestler, because you could say you're a pro wrestler, but honestly, right, being someone who wants to understand how to do it. We talked to briefly there, we mentioned Dave Marquez and Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. One of the things that you did that kind of stands out was in 2013, you won the Percy Pringle III Memorial Cup final battle royal match. Now, in that, you had Willie Mack, Tito Escondido, Ray Rosa, Peter Avalon. It's not like it was guys that were so-so, you're talking about legitimate. What did it mean to you when that all, was put together and that all went down? Given the fact that, for anyone listening who doesn't know who Percy Pringle was, he was Paul Bearer, the Undertaker's manager for all those years. And he started off as Percy Pringle, who was this amazing heel manager in the, old territory days. And he was one of the best guys at teaching people. So wrestlers respect this man. And here you go. Here's a battle royal with his name on the Memorial Cup. What was that like, man?
I mean, a little tiny backstory.
Yeah.
Because when I first started with Dave, in 2000 and must have been 8 or 9, he brought me and Hector in as a tag team.
Okay.
Right? So I was like, okay, we're doing this little tag team thing. Cool. And then I left, or I don't know what happened. I honestly don't know what the deal was. It just, maybe I didn't reach out enough to be like, hey, I want to get booked, which was, just stupid on my part as a kid, but
yeah.
Still, learning process. And then I go back and I worked for him again at another location. And then I left again. I think it was kind of family issues and, trying, I had to sell my car, difficult to it was pulling teeth to get to shows. I mean, I was able to do it, but it wasn't nowadays you call an Uber
right,
you get there. And plus where I lived in California, it wasn't you get on this bus and go here.
Right. Yeah.
It was middle of nowhere practically, to get to LA or, San Diego, but,
right.
So eventually I made my way back and then left again, and then things were better. And then he hit me up and he's like, hey, want to make a return? It's like, absolutely, let's do it, And so I'm kind of in here as a tag team, then like a mid-card kind of guy. And then out of nowhere, it's oh, hey, we're going to, do this and do this and do this. And it was and I remember one of them, I think it was the Red Carpet Rumble.
Yeah.
That I was looking on the sheet, and it was the final four, and it was Scorpio Sky, Willie Mack, Sean Ricker, and Ricky Mandel. And that's where I was whoa. And it kind of reminded me, as much as I love Mr. Perfect, love the guy, right, one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, it was that year where Mr. Perfect was in the final four for the Rumble.
Right.
That'd be sweet if he would, but you got Triple H in there. I think it was Triple H, Kurt, himself, and then was it Austin?
Possibly, yeah.
In the final four?
It's something close.
And you're just so it just felt so, that guy's the one guy who's never been, the champ,
right,
already. So that's kind of how I felt, was, all these other guys were, kind of a little bit more, had a little bit more steam behind them.
Yeah.
So for me to be in there, it was really cool. And I think that's when I kind of realized, maybe they're gonna, start utilizing me more, because I think Ricker just got signed to WWE,
right,
at the time. And then from there, it just all this here's this push, and we're going to do this and do this, and then, okay, well, we're going to have you win the cup, and after you win the cup, we're going to have you win, I think they said the TV title. So I was okay, cool. But going back to the cup, I mean, it's Paul Bearer. Yeah, and I think he had just, I mean, it was recently that he had passed. So for me to, right, be the first guy that is going to be ignored, because it's his memory. Oh, here's the Percy Cup, obviously you're going to, you know, bring that part up about him passing away, and then here's your winner, yeah. Ricky Mandel. Oh, man. You know, it was just so cool to know that they trusted me and believed in me to carry that name.
And within a year, you end up beating Scorpio Sky for the Heritage Heavyweight title that CWFH has. Really, seriously, at this point, was it just like, you know, was it a relief that all the work that you put in over those years, you're seeing the trust, like you said, and that, you know, you can have a belt and, you know, feel secure in the sense that, hey, I'm doing something right.
Right. The best way I like to put it was when, you remember when Edge won the title for the first time?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he went from being like, I mean, I've always, you know, been a huge fan, still am, you know, of his work. But he went from being like, you know, the tag guy to like the Intercontinental champion.
Right.
You know, doing that. And then out of nowhere, it's like, oh, here's him with Money in the Bank, and he's going to win the WWE title. You know, at first, it's like, okay, this is a brand new guy, or not a brand new guy, but he's winning the title for the first time. So he's new to the heavyweight championship list of guys.
Right.
He's new to the top guy category, if you will. And that's kind of how I felt, because I felt like kind of like that mid-card guy, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, it became like, you're going to be the guy. And that's what Marquez told me. He pulled me aside, and he said, all right, within the next few months, you're going to be the guy. Are you ready? And I was like, yeah. Like, you know, like, yeah, I'm ready. But, well, not really. I don't know if any of us are ever really ready or feel ready.
Right.
But I was like, yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm not going to. No, no, sir. I think you should give it to someone else. Hell no. I'm going to do it. And give me the pressure, because maybe that'll, like, make me perform better. But, it was just this, like I said, just going back to the trust.
Yeah.
Just to know that somebody trusts you enough on a TV show, regardless of how, you know, like, maybe it's not as many viewers as, like, WWE or Impact or whatever's going on at the time. But it's still there, and people are still familiar with it. And at the very least, it kind of was, like, if not the place to be, one of the places to be, right, in California.
Yeah.
So to be the guy who's like, oh, you're going to be the Heritage Champ, was, you know, like, a huge honor and a huge step for myself. And didn't really care what anybody else had to say about it, because there was flack. Oh, Ricky Mandel's a champ. What? Yeah. Whatever, dude. Like, get off your couch and train. Maybe you'll maybe you'll understand someday. But all the effort I put into it, obviously, the guy running the show sees something in me. So,
well, and
you
I
know,
and
get
I
that up your ass.
Yeah, I mean, and something that really, like, I don't think people think about it in these terms, and that is very simple. Like you said, you have the big companies, and we know that the big companies are going to generate money no matter what. You know, Vince McMahon loses, you know, thousands upon thousands, hundreds of thousands of viewers, you know, on a weekly basis, and then regains X amount of viewers right back, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Whereas if you are given a title on a local scene, especially if it's a local television show, the promoter is, I mean, that is their pocket money going into their promotion. And I think a lot of people forget that, you know, the reason that you're champ is not only, you know, about your abilities, but also in the fact that you're being trusted, that that fan base doesn't thin out a little bit. So it's a very, very respectful thing. They're not going to put a belt on someone they know is going to turn people away from the door.
Right. Well, I had just spoken with Justin Borden at we did Primetime Live last Tuesday.
Yeah.
And like I said, I've known him, I mean, my whole career practically. I mean, because, like, you know, he would ref my matches while I was on the indies. And then when I went to Lucha Underground, he was there too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, over the years, I was able to, you know, really, like, talk to him and, you know, get to know him. And so it was a surprise when I seen him there. I had no clue who was going to be there, but we were just talking and we had brought that up. And he had mentioned, and like I said, I don't know if, like, I don't know about the numbers and, you know, what the truth behind all this is, but he said that, like, during that time when we were running that angle where I was the champ and he was my, like, I had paid him off as my like personal referee pretty much,
yeah,
you know, that was when, they had the most viewers.
Wow. Yeah.
So, I mean, to hear that recently.
Yeah.
Was like, wait, is really? Like, is that like, is there truth behind that? Are you just, you know, just blowing smoke up my ass? I don't know. But, I mean, if that's the case, then, you know, you got to pat yourself on the back for it.
Sure.
And, you know, everyone involved.
Well,
because, you know, obviously it's not just me. It's the whole angle. It's
right.
I'm working with. Who's selling for me, who I'm selling for, who,
right.
Shelly was with me at the time, I believe, for a little bit.
Yeah.
What she's doing on the outside to, like, not take too much away from a match, but, you know, encourage the match and, you know, Justin doing his part, everybody involved, cameraman catching the right angles of everything.
Right.
So, you know, obviously not just me, but if that's the case, then, like I said, cool, like, awesome. We're doing something right to bring money and bring viewers.
It's a very tough, tricky thing to do, too, because of the fact that a lot of those matches that you had during that time period, you were winning by DQ.
Yes.
I mean, how about that? You know, you'd figure that people would get... it's so true. I mean, you're gambling when you're doing that kind of finishing all the time, and that fucking
right.
It paid
right.
off. It paid off for you, man.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it. I mean, it goes back to that old, you know, the old, you know, storytelling, the old,
yep.
you know, old way of storytelling with, like, you want to see this heel get his ass whooped.
Chicken shit heels.
He's doing everything in his power to keep the title. Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to get counted out. I'm going to get DQ'd. And at the time, I really, honestly, like, I mean, like, you know, you grow. You know, this is just what I'm talking about, growing as a performer and growing as an individual and listening, finally hearing what people are saying. Because I might have heard it back then, but I didn't really hear it, if that
yeah.
makes sense.
Yep.
But to think, like, okay, I'm the champ, but I'm not even, like, getting a victory. Like, this is kind of like, what kind of bogus champion am I? Well, it's not that I'm a bogus champ. It's that the character, the way they wanted to do it. I want to keep the title. I'm a sleazeball champ.
Yeah.
I want to keep this title, and I'm going to do whatever I can, because as long as I'm the champ, I'm making more money, or however, you know, wrestling works.
Yeah.
You know, just I'm the champ. I did this. I beat this guy. I beat that guy. Or, you know, well, like, you're delusional.
Right.
Because I remember wrestling Matt Hardy, and he beat me.
Yeah.
But Stu Stone was always like, hey, just go out there. I don't care if you lost. You're going out there and you're saying you beat Matt Hardy because you're still the champ. you know, you still have the title. That means you won. And it's like, it was so, like, it makes no sense. But at the same time, it makes all the sense just to be like I said, just delusional. You see this title? Nope, I'm the champ. Nope, I won. Uh-huh. Yeah, whatever you say. I'm the champ.
But you brought up a great, you know, like Stu, that's the kind of, you know, it's the kind of thinking. It's funny that you said, like, as you look back in age, you know, obviously you mature and you develop as a performer and you kind of understand things with a kind of a clearer view. A guy like Stu, who's not actually in the ring, but has the mind of a filmmaker and as a storyteller, is the person, you know, perfect person to pick up on something like that and say, hey, you know, this is what you gotta go with this, go with this. And I think that's
right.
That's something that a lot of younger wrestlers, if they take the time to, like you said, just listen for a little bit.
Right.
That, you know, their mind might actually open up sooner, which of course can accelerate your career faster.
Right. And going, yeah. Sorry to cut you off.
No.
But like going with like even like another thing, like I was always trying to learn from different people and different, you know, whatever of all experience, because there's always something that somebody could teach you, because even if somebody's only in for a year, maybe they learn from somebody that's been doing it for 20 years and they have like a piece of advice that is like, whoa, that's actually like really good advice that came from this person that I'm listening to from this young guy now. But still, you know, the advice is still put out there. It doesn't really matter how you get it. If it's good advice, it's good advice.
Yeah.
But at those like, you know, independent shows, a lot of the times people, you know, you just show up casual, you know, summertime, shorts and tank top.
Yeah.
And I remember I had to go out and cut a promo at the camp. I didn't know. I had no idea. I just thought I was just showing up to have a match and then, you know, whatever. But went out there and all I had was shorts and this tank top. So I think I went out there and it might have been a run-in. I don't really remember. It was something, though. But I went out there with shorts and the tank top. And I remember him pulling me aside and just being like, hey, man, like, not to take away, you know, how you dress or your style or whatever, that's cool. But maybe, you know, maybe not a suit, but, you know, presentable slacks or pants or jeans or just something. And I was like, well, like, what do you mean? You know, he's like, oh, well, because, you know, you're out there cutting this promo or doing whatever as a champ in shorts and a tank top. And like, as soon as he said that, I thought about it. And I was like, you know what? Like, that's 100% correct, because then it just kind of looks bush league. Oh, I'm the champ. But at the same time, you know, you had like guys in the like 98 or like The Rock and all those guys would come out and cut promos in their shorts. But at this time, you know, just showing up in like plaid shorts and a tank top really, I mean, it spoke to me. So like now anywhere I go, I always bring, I'm not like, whether I'm doing like creepy character or like sexy be tricky. I'm either going to cut the promo in my gear already, or I bring like jeans, like my black jeans, and I'm just kind of like, okay, well, this is how my character and I would dress.
Right.
To, you know, so I'm not just showing up in like I just came off the street. Unless I'm like wearing like super short shorts to like make it like kind of like funny. You know?
For sure.
But other than that, that was just like a little piece of advice that I took from, like you said, somebody who came from another form of entertainment.
Well, and that's, you know, a very interesting thought process in terms of wrestlers on the independent level, and even if it's a TV production, like Championship Wrestling or even Ring of Honor or Impact, they don't have necessarily costumers, seamstresses who can, you know, like, you know, have things ready for you, or, you know, listen, you walk into a theater wardrobe, you know, Saturday Night Live is a great example, right? You walk in there, you're taking care of anything you could think of for a sketch that you write. They have shit there. You as a wrestler, you're it's like being a background player on a movie where you have to take, you know, two or three different choices of clothing with you. And then you fit, you know, it fits the whatever it is that you're doing that day. And people don't think about that. I love that point.
And that's another thing, like going to like Lucha Underground, I feel like every single one of us had, you know, whatever gear, like some of us wore. I mean, I wore my own gear as Ricky Mandel for a while, and they were like, okay, you're Trustee now, here's some gear. You're going to be Ricky Mundo now, here's this gear. But a lot of us either had, you know, costumes ready to go, or we had our own stuff. But at the same time, I feel like everyone had, here's like vignette clothes for you. What size jeans do you wear? Yeah. Oh, I'm a 32, I'm a 32 regular. Okay, we'll go get those jeans for you. I didn't have to worry about like, oh, I didn't bring jeans today.
Right.
Because they already had like, oh, surprise vignette, surprise run-in. Here's your jeans. Like, okay, cool. We're doing a run-in. Can somebody go get Ricky, run over to Kohl's or Target or wherever and pick up a pair of jeans or a plain black shirt. We need like, what size are you? I have a small. Okay, we're a small or medium. Okay. And they would like get that stuff like right away. But yeah, like you said, on the indies, you're like, oh, you didn't bring anything?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess we'll figure something out. I guess you could run out in your underwear. Like, no.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. That's amazing. Now, as we're kind of getting close to a little bit of a wrap up here, you know, you just did the match for the United Wrestling Network.
Yes.
And Primetime Live, which is pay-per-view. Those people who are not doing this yet, don't know about it yet, please check it out because it's great. Dave Marquez, again, behind this with Billy Corrigan. Who came up with the tag team name of Beef Candy for you and Richie Slade?
So Richie had hit me up and he's like, hey, I'll give you a little backstory. Actually, I think it's funny. You know, he's just like, hey, I heard you're going to make your way back out here. We're teaming up. And I was like, what? He goes, yeah, like I heard they were telling me a championship that they're going to team me, you, and we're going to flex as our manager, and we're going to be called Beef Candy. And I was like, look, man, I'm all for it, but nobody said anything to me, which I thought was just hilarious, because I guess they're just kind of like running through ideas. It was like a maybe or whatever. And then Dave called me, and just like, Richard, how you doing, Dave? Good, good, good. You know about our Primetime Live stuff? Of course I do. Okay. We want to team you. We got this idea. Team you and Richie up with Flex as your manager. Okay, cool. Let's do it. I like Richie. I like Flex. Cool.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for him to drop the name that Richie told me. Didn't say anything. I see Richie like a few days before we're shooting. And we're just talking about the day. Like, okay, Beef Candy. Apparently, it was Flex who came up with it. And he said it during a promo. And Aaron Stevens, who's, you know, backstage now, likes it. So all of a sudden, I'm just part of Beef Candy. Like, can we do can I just cut a promo where I'm like, what? What's the name? cut the commercial. But, yeah, just take the opportunity and have fun.
Oh yeah, man. It's just hysterical. It's great. And it's not
right.
And you know what? That's the other thing too. I think sometimes wrestlers, when they don't get it, they look at something in the negative light, as if, oh, I've got to be a part of that. That's bullshit. I'm fucking better than this.
Right.
And it's like, you said it, you got to run with it and just have fucking fun. Why are you doing it if you're not having fun?
Right.
You know?
I mean, I'm teaming with somebody who I've always gotten along with, Richie.
Yeah.
Flex has always been cool, so I'm just looking at it from, like, that standpoint of going out there and performing with people who I enjoy performing with and are cool.
Yeah.
And we can come up with fun stuff. And whatever happens with the name, at the end of the day, it's just a name, you know. I could either go on, if people start talking about, oh, it's a stupid name, blah, blah, blah. Well, I could say it too then. Oh, yeah, it's dumb. Or it's great. Oh, yeah, it is great. You
right.
know, like, whatever. Like, who cares? At the end of the day, the end of the day, you know, I'm still like technically like an independent contractor, so I'm going to do different things at different places.
Sure.
Anyway, so.
And the other thing too is that you know, again, those wrestlers who don't understand that, you know, you could be in Arizona doing one type of gimmick, you know, on TV in Hollywood for that type of gimmick, and you know, in Florida doing a totally different gimmick.
Right.
And I think that's one of the most versatile things that you have to be able to adapt. And if you're not versatile, if you can't, you know, get out of that mold that you put yourself in, then you're screwed. Like Beef Candy, as goofy as we want to laugh and say, oh my God, you know, that's so sad. It honestly is a potential for selling merch. That's the funniest thing.
Right. And you look at it like, obviously people are talking about it.
Yes.
If you're going like, oh, Beef Candy, whether you're like, oh, that's great, or who came up with that, or oh, I love that, that's such a, oh, that's perfect for them, or no, they don't look like they'd be beat, whatever, you got the buzz.
Yeah.
People are talking. So whatever light it may be in, as long as we're getting the job done, and as long as people are, you know, happy with everything.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing.
You know, people, the guys backstage are happy with it. People are talking. Isn't that what it's kind of about?
Exactly. You know, before we totally wrap up, what's your go-to right now in terms of, we had the pandemic going on, you had a lot of time on your hands. What's your go-to in terms of Netflix at this point?
It was Cobra Kai.
Okay? Oh, yeah.
I know that's such a like a generic answer at this time, but the truth is, before all that, you know, Cobra Kai talk, like, oh my God, everybody's got to watch this, I remember hearing about it on, like, it was on YouTube, correct?
It was their pay for YouTube network, exactly.
Right. So the day that came on, the day that like they put Cobra Kai on Netflix, I was like, oh, I heard about this, and I'll check out an episode. I got nothing to do right now for the next hour. Turn it on. I was just hooked. I watched the first like how 8 episodes, and then went over to my girlfriend's house, and I was like, she's like, what are you doing? I was like, can I watch this show? Like, you're not doing anything. Like, and then she starts watching and she's hooked. And then we went right into season 2. And I watched that whole thing within like a day and a half, just binge watching it. But now as far as, everything goes, I just look for movies, whatever I could find. I just watched, Not Another Teen Movie the other day to see if it still holds up. And it did. It was still funny. And there was some stuff that went over my head as a kid that made me laugh.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Even harder now.
Sure. It's, you know, that's the best thing, too, when you look at it. You know, it's funny because with, you know, all the different movements that have been going on within the last 5-10 years, you look back at some of this stuff and you, like Revenge of the Nerds, if anyone watches that movie now, you can literally like go, okay, that wouldn't get said, that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, it's crazy.
Go ahead.
No, it's crazy, man.
I was watching, and this was something on when Grease came out. Okay.
Yeah.
When they did like, here's Grease, the movie, here's, you know, just this whole thing on like a documentary on it, yada, 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 all sorts of stuff. And I'm watching the documentary, and they were saying when that movie came out, what was it, like 1970?
78. Was it the 70s? Yeah, 1978.
Right.
Yep.
And this documentary was done, I want to say, in the 90s, maybe a little later, but they were even talking about stuff they did in the movie then, and one of the writers and producers, somebody was talking about how they got away with a lot of stuff for the 70s.
Right.
So it's just funny to look back at like movies, like while you're watching them and you don't think anything of them. Well, in 20 years, that one thing you're watching, that might be a big deal.
Yeah.
So it's really fun just because you're not think, because, you know, I grew up on like South Park and like Family Guy and The Simpsons. So like I'll go back and watch stuff from then and just still laugh. And it's like, that might be offensive to somebody now, but like at the time,
yeah,
you know, like, well, it was just jokes, it
you
was
know,
just a joke.
It's funny you bring up Grease though, because what's even more interesting about that is that movie was cleaned up from the actual Broadway show, because
right.
The Broadway show, Grease Lightning, was all about getting fucking laid.
Right.
You know, and this was what the show was about. It was about horny teenagers, you know, going through these emotions. And oddly enough, Sandy changes her perspective and he changes his perspective. And basically, in the end, it's two people who absolutely want to fuck.
Right.
You know, coming together finally. But yeah, it's interesting you said that, because there were so many different things in the play that they couldn't even do in the movie. And now the movie, if you tried, I think even like when high schools put it on now, it's toned so far back that it's
right.
You know, is this really now a reflective piece? You know, let's face it. Whether it's the 1950s, the 1970s, now, there's one common thread, and that is we're all humans. We all have the same desires, you know?
Right.
And that's a translation into wrestling too. You know, everyone who says the Attitude Era was the best, or the 80s were the best, or whatever. If you look at the through line in wrestling, no matter when it is, there's one simple goal, and that is conveying human emotions through a story.
Right. 100%. Like, well, yeah, you just said it. Like, you bring your character and just performing as whatever character you want to be. Or even, you know, I had this talk with somebody too, where like a lot of people will be like, oh, that guy's not a character, you know. But it's like, well, some of those, I mean, maybe not everybody, but some of these guys who just kind of go out there and wrestle and are just like the best wrestler, well, that's kind of, that depending on who it is, you know, could be their gimmick.
Yeah.
And obviously not everybody could pull it off, because there's people, I'm the best wrestler, and then they go out there and they're just sloppy.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
Like, okay, well, clearly you're not the best wrestler, because you know, instead of hiding your weaknesses, you're, you know, exploiting yourself. But,
yeah.
But still, even to that day, it's still a character to some degree. So yes, like that's the main purpose. Like, go out there, let the fans be taken away from whatever's bothering them for like that day, or
yeah,
you know, that moment.
And you know, that's the other thing too. The word character, if we use it in everyday life, there's only certain people that you can point to that you've met in your life where you can go, boy, that person's a real character.
Right. But
all the other people, you know, all the different friends that you have, all the acquaintances you make, they might not be someone that you go, oh, what a character, but you can pick up on, are they the alpha? You know, are they the nerdy person? Like, they have a compartmental, part of their personality. And I think that's the one thing that sometimes we forget, and that is, not all wrestlers have to be characters. All wrestlers,
right,
you know, they have to have a story to themselves. And as long as you have that story and you know that your character would do A instead of B, then you're on the right path.
Exactly. And, you know, a lot of the problems with people, too, a lot of the guys nowadays, it might just be because of, like, not being on TV. Guys on TV have that advantage.
Right.
Or if you have, like, if you have a big following as an independent wrestler who's not on TV, but you have many followers who keep up with your Instagram or your social media or your YouTube or whatever.
Right.
You could convey that character over vignettes and backstage things. A lot of people don't really do that. So there's been many times where I'm like, oh, well, what's the guy's gimmick that he's going to go for? What's his deal? And they'll be like, oh, he's just like a lazy couch potato gimmick or something. And you're like, okay. So he goes out and wrestles. Well, what's he doing to prove to me that he's a couch potato? That's his character. Or like, oh, he's a gamer. Does he do something to convey that he's a gamer? Does he have like a, you know, whatever, like...
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, just like these like weird little things to convey, or are they just going out there being like, oh, this is my character. I'm me.
Yeah.
And I will, I'm me. And this is what I do. And it's like, okay, so you're just going to wrestle a match.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, you got to do something.
Yeah.
Got to bring them in somehow.
It's funny. It's funny you said couch potato, because I've always had this, you know, vision of, I wanted to call myself Lumpy Gravy. Okay.
Okay.
And the idea was, you come down, very basic, just brown boots, brown tights. And the idea was that he was very much that kind of couch potato, you know, and was someone who, like, you know, you punch him, it really hurts, you know. But if you did your finisher on him, he would always kick out of the finisher. But then,
okay.
But then if you put him in a headlock, he'd end up tapping out, you know.
right. Gotcha.
The opposite psychology on, you know, here's a person who obviously is, you know, not the greatest wrestler, but thinks he's the shit because he could take any punishing finisher, but he really won't admit that the simple basics of a sleeper, you know, because you never see guys, right. You never see guys anymore literally going to sleep with a sleeper or a DDT putting them out, you know, and it's that,
right.
You know, go opposite of the new age psychology. And it's just fun to see when people do experiment with that kind of stuff and think outside of the box. And I think that, you know, that's what we're seeing now. And it's people like you that these kids are looking up to nowadays. And I think that,
well, I hope so. Oh,
absolutely, brother. Absolutely, man. Because, you know, if you think about it from, you know, these kids who can now easily YouTube one of your matches, or, you know, find Lucha Underground, or find, you know, something that you've done, that's what it's all about. Just watching. And, you know, you're probably inspiring, as we talk, some 15-year-old out there who, you know, maybe saw you, you know, 3 years ago and is like, you know, I want to do this. If Ricky can do this, I can do this.
Right.
So I think, you know, that's one of the things you also got to look at and just remember, man, the stuff you're talking about today, the stuff that you're doing in the ring, the stuff that you're doing in promos, it's all there for a reason, man, because people can use this to inspire them to achieve, and you're still achieving yourself as well. And that's what I love to see, man. And I think your growth and what you've been able to accomplish since you started, you know, that to me is something amazingly special that many people can't say, man. And you got to be proud of that.
Right. I appreciate that. Thank you.
And with that, we will wrap it up here for today. Thank you, Ricky, for joining us. And Thank you, listeners. Ricky, if you could give your social media so people know where they can find you on social media, and please, people, follow him and look up this information. Go ahead, Rick.
It's all Instagram and Twitter at Ricky_Mandel, and then Facebook at Ricky Mandel.
Awesome. All right, everyone, thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.
Biggest Bad Boys of Podcasting.